I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Support for this episode comes from Team Pennsylvania, hosting the Pennsylvania Hemp Summit, two events in 2022 offering a place for farmers, professionals, investors, and policymakers to learn and connect. Details at pahempsummit.com. World Central Kitchen is serving thousands of fresh meals to Ukrainian families fleeing home, as well as people remaining in the country. This week on Let's Talk About Food, host Louisa Kasdan spoke with Henry Patterson about his upcoming relief trip.
So you're going to Poland, and I think you told me you're going to be there for at least 2 weeks.
I'm going to Poland to help feed Ukrainian refugees. With Jose Andreas' World Central Kitchen, I decided that's what I wanted to do for my 70th birthday. I leave in just a few days. We all see that what the Russians are doing is contemptible. As a food person, we all love to help. It's in our DNA. And here are people who really need our help. So if you want to help the Ukrainian refugees, either with money or even your hands and heart, find hashtag Chefs for Ukraine and World Central Kitchen. We have to do something. We can help. Remember hashtag Chefs for Ukraine.
Welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio. In preparation for today's program, I was rereading sections of Fabio Parasecoli's interesting book called Al Dente, The History of Food in Italy, published in 2014. And actually, Fabio was on my show at that time, so I'll get that episode at some point and put it up for you. But in that book, Fabio reported on an interesting study specifically for this program today. And our program today is all about Italian rice. In 2011, according to Fabio in his book, the 150th anniversary of the unification of Italy, the popular Italian food and wine magazine Gambero Rosso conducted a survey of its readers to identify what were, in their opinion, the most important Italian foods. Well, trying to get anybody to agree on that, I would imagine, is pretty difficult. But the online survey indicated that, to no one's great surprise, the top billings went to Parmigiano Reggiano at 54%, followed closely by extra virgin olive oil and pizza napolitana, each at 43%, and bufala mozzarella. But surprising to many was that rice came in at over 37% and appeared to be more important than bread or spaghetti, which is hard to believe. But the list definitely skewed towards the north. It was produced by readers of a high-end food magazine who had online access. Well, surprises aside, it is a fact that Italy is the largest rice production country in Europe, with a cultivation area of well over 500,000 acres and over 1.5 million tons of total grain production. Most of the Italian production is grown in the area of Vercelli, Alessandria, Pavia, and Novara, between Lombardy and Piedmont. My guest today, Paolo Salvadore di Wisnoff, knows the business of rice quite well. Paolo is an heir to one of the oldest rice farms in that area, the Principato di Lucedio, owned and operated by his mother, the Contessa Rosetta Clara Cavalli di Paolo, you're going to have to help me out. Cavalli di Olivola Salvadore di Wisenhof. Am I saying Wisenhof correctly?
Yes.
Okay. And Paolo joins me today from Vercelli in Italy. Welcome, Paolo, or should I call you Count Paolo?
Hello, Linda. Paolo, it's perfect.
Okay. Paolo, I know I butchered your mother's name, but can you tell me, give everybody, I have done reading from your website and from different information that I have on the background of the Principato di Lucedia, but explain for our listeners some of the history of that farm, or what you call it, the factory or the area.
Lucedio is an abbey and has been built in 1123 by Cistercian monks. Monks coming from France, from Bourgogne, and the Cistercians were an order vocated to agriculture. So Lucedio started at the beginning to be a farm, and it's still until now a farm. It's one of the oldest farms in Italy. The monks, they were used to build the abbey in an area far from cities, because city means corruption. So they started cultivated the land around Lucedio. At the beginning, they didn't cultivate the rice. They cultivate other products. And then at the end of the 13th century, beginning of the 14th century, they start the rice cultivation. And we consider that Lucedio is the first place where the rice has been cultivated in Italy. We have a document of one abbot of Lucedio, and he said, in this year, we planted in front of the abbey a certain quantity of rice. So at the beginning, it was cultivated in the cloister as a plant, typical plant of the cloister. And then probably they understood that it was easy to cultivate in the fields. And so they start the rice cultivation, and they become very, very rich. At a certain moment, the monks of Lucedio, they had more than 7,000 hectares, not only in Piemont, but also in other areas of Italy, and also in Greece, also in an area that now is between Iran and Iraq. So very, very wealthy. Mm. And this was also the cause of the decadence, because the most important Italian families, they want to have the richness of the abbey of Lucedio. So at a certain moment, the Pope expropriated the monks. He said that the monks, they didn't respect the rules, but in reality, it was only an excuse to keep all the land. So Lucedio in 1775, the monks left Lucedio, and the Savoia family, the royal family of Piemont at that time, became the owner of Lucedio. When Napoleon arrived in Italy in 1801, he became the owner of Lucedio, and then he gave the property to his brother-in-law, the Prince Camillo Borghese. In 1821, Lucedio was bought by a free investor, and one was an ancestor of our family. The free investor, after a few months, they start fighting together, and so they divide the property in three blocks, and our ancestor obtained Lucedio. Then one was again sold, and my grandfather bought back Lucedio in 1937. This is the main story, but there are many, many links to the Italian and the European story with Lucedio. Free Pope, they spent some time in Lucedio because it was really very, very important in the medieval time.
Yeah, well, just reading the background of it, I mean, it reads like, you know, opening a Renaissance history book, and even before, Middle Ages to Renaissance. I mean, the family names and as you just mentioned, Napoleon, Borghese, and then even before the Savoys, and just amazing that it's been in your family since theoretically it's been in your family since the mid 1800s, right?
No, also before, because my mother is a descendant of the landlords who invited the monks from Bourgogne to Lucedio. Wow. So it was in our family, then was out, then revoked, and then again out, and then my grandfather revoked it before the Second World War.
Needless to say, it's a really old rice farm. My question, and that brings me to my question about the rice. Rice, I'm sure I've read rice had been introduced to Italy repeatedly during different periods of time, even back, in the early days, before, let's say, around the 600s to 800s, from both the Arabs, the Muslims who traveled there and took over like Sicily and worked its way up, yes, or by Venetian travelers, whether it, and merchants But no written document about where exactly the rice came from. Now, you've had a lot of different varieties of rice over the years, so you don't know where, do you know where the very first rice that was planted came from, whether it was, you know, Arab rice or Chinese rice or?
The rice arrives from Asia. Roman and Greek, they never cultivated the rice. They were used to buy the rice from merchants. And they didn't use it as a food, but it was so expensive that they used it as a medicine. Or the rich Roman woman, they had slaves checking the grains of rice, and they used the rice as a beauty cream. So the rice arrives from Asia, but probably the Arabs, when they invaded Sicily, they started the rice cultivation, but there is no documents proving this. At that time, Sicily has a lot of water, so it's possible that they had started rice cultivation. Uh-huh. But we have no documents proving this. We have documents talking about the rice in northern Italy.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense, you know, what was going on as far as trade at that time. What makes your region, this whole Vercelli, the Piedmont and Lombardy region, what makes it such an important rice area, rice producer in Europe?
We have a lot of water in our region, in Piedmont, in Lombardy, because we have the Po Valley. And the Po is the main river in Italy. And so rice needs in Europe to be covered, the fields need to be covered by water, not for irrigation, but to protect the rice from the difference in climate from the night to the day. So you need the water. Otherwise, if you produce, you cultivate the rice without water, you will lose a lot of the production. Mm-hmm. So we have a system of channels that brings the water from the main river to the fields. And these thousands and thousands of kilometers of channels are maintained by the farmers, the rice farmers. So they do something very important for all the region, because if you have a problem of flood, with these channels reduce the risk for the population, because the water can go everywhere without going against the houses or people.
Right. So this is, I've seen it referred to as channelization.
Yes.
Making the channels to control the water.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So the channels then divide the land. Is that what's called the pianetti?
The piani sono, the fields are divided. You have to think that in the ancient time, with no machine, everything was done by men with animals. So the fields were very not very big, because mm-hmm. the horse, they had to relax when he turns and in return in the opposite direction. Now we have 500 hectares here in Lucedio, and we have only 3 people working all the year and 2 person work in 6 months, because everything is done by machine. So now we are in the opposite situation. We need to have very large fields, campi or campetti. It's the Italian translation of fields. Mm-hmm. And they should be big, because the machine, every time when they have to turn, the machine has to turn, we lose time. So in the last 50 years, all the rice farmers, they have enlarged the fields because the machine are very, very big.
During that time, when the production was mechanized, there I was reading about when you changed types, or your farm, many farms changed the varieties of rice, was due to rice blast.
The rice blast is a very big problem for the rice producer. In Lucedio, we are very. We don't have a lot of problem, because our land is very solid and compact, and so this reduces the risk of the blast. There are 3 techniques to fight against the blast.
And excuse me, is the blast a fungus or?
It's a fungus.
A disease?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a fungus. And to fight against this, there are 3 strategies. The first one is the crop rotation. Mm-hmm. So never cultivate the same, never cultivate all the year rice in the same fields, but right. You have to change with other. It's something that returns like it was done centuries ago. Mm-hmm. The second strategy is correct fertilization. If you add too much fertilizer on the fields, this fungus can arrive. And the third strategy is the correct flood level of the water. Very important, because if the water is lower, again, the fungus can attack the rice. And last but not least, the use of disease-free seeds, because some farmers, they are used to reuse the rice they have produced in the autumn as a seeds for the next season. But this is very bad, because you risk to have the infection in the seeds.
Oh, right. That for sure. Well, you have taken a lot of steps at your farms to really make changes in also the machinery that I was reading. But you believe in everything being very clean for both the environment and for the fields. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. It's very important to have in the past decades, probably the farmers, they've used too much pesticides in the fields. Mm-hmm. Now we are more, the young farmers are more, they are more interested in environmental. And so we receive from the European Union money for the cultivation, but we must respect in a very severe way the product that we use, the quantity of the pesticides, and when we use it. One third of our farm is organic, so we don't use in this part any pesticides. We only we try to destroy the plants that they make problem to the rice in a mechanic way, or in summer with people, generally Chinese, because no Italian want to do this. They have to stay in the fields, and they have to cut the herbs that are still surviving. And they, if you didn't do this, you will lose part of the production, part of the rice production.
Hmm.
And
go ahead.
About the environmental sustainability, there are some things that are very important that we do. Rice cultivation with the permanent submersion method. This is very important, because one of the main advantages is the almost total containment of the nitrate percolation that is very, very dangerous in the Po Valley, in the groundwater. And we use less water. That is also very important, not to waste the water. Also because the our fields, they have a very high percent of clay. And so you don't lose the water that this will happen if you have a sandy fields. Mm-hmm. And this also helps to control the weeds. Mm-hmm. The second things that we do, the cover crop. We, after one harvest in autumn, we plant a cover crop to naturally refertilize the land without any chemical fertilizer. And then the rotation of the crops. Never do more than 3 years of rice in the same fields. We use soy or corn or something else, mm-hmm, to enrich the fields. And the fourth strategy is the adoption of precision agriculture to manage fertilizer and phytosanitary treatments. So less product in the fields and in the correct moment. The fifth is the mechanical weed control integrated with the chemical control. The sixth is the use of forecasting models for the prevention and containment of the main phytosanitary issue. And then we keep in the farm 25 hectares of wood. And this is also something that remove the carbon dioxide emitted during the cultivation process.
Right. I was going to ask something about the submersion, about greenhouse gases. So if you I assume helps avoid the buildup of too many of
yes,
the greenhouse
absolutely.
Gases. Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, we receive all the rice farmers in Europe receive an amount of money from the European government because there are two possibilities of cultivate the rice: to plant the seeds in the water, so putting the water in mid-April in a few weeks, or to add the water 1 month later. So if you do the traditional way, planting the seeds in the water, you help, so you have the water for 1 month, 1.5 months more in the fields. This is something that is very good for the environmental. And so we are pressed to respect this rule. Many farmers, they try to do another technique that is to plant a seed like corn and then to add the water after 40, 45 days. But this is a waste of water because the water that is, the snow that is going from the mountains in the river now, if you don't use it in the fields, will go to the sea and this water will be lost. If you put the water in the fields, you keep the level of the water under the fields higher than with the other technique.
Mm. And then when you're, how do you drain the fields when you're ready to harvest?
We dry the fields in mid-August because mm-hmm. we start the cultivation, the harvest in from mid-September until the end of October, depending on the weather and also depending on the variety, because there are some varieties, they have a long life and some have shorter life.
Right, right. So then the water just goes back to the sea, right? I mean, whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You wonder how rice ever got grown before all of these innovations were made, but it's really seems a very time consuming project. But now you don't transplant; you seed directly in the ground. Is that correct?
Yes. Nobody in Europe do the transplant now. It was done until the 50s. So you had this was something made by women during a period of 50 days. We have in Lucedio 300 women coming from Eastern Italy or Southern Italy. The name of these women were Mondine. And there is a famous Italian movie of the 60s, Riso Amaro, mm-hmm. Bitter Rice, where you see the life of these women. And it was a very, very hard job because they have to stay in the water with mosquitoes and all the animals that you have in the water. And they have to transplant the rice in the fields. And they had also to put out all the bad herbs that can provoke problems to the rice cultivation. Now you couldn't see this.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who has made a garden and knows that it's a lot easier just to disperse seeds than to transplant all those little seedlings one by one into the ground. I can imagine that was, you know, not only the dangers, health dangers, but the back-breaking work that it required. I commend you that. And then after you harvest the rice, I've seen, you know, the pictures from your farm, from the website about how then it's all milled now, pretty much all by, it's all machine milled. And that's quite a process in itself too, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, it's not a very fascinating process because everything is done by machine. Mm-hmm. When the rice arrive in the farm, we only put out humidity. So there is a machine that produces hot air, and the rice turn inside this big pipe. And until the moment when the machine checks the percent of humidity that we establish, we do this. Many of the farmers, they use diesel. We use a gas that is more expensive, but you don't have any percent of the diesel on the grains. So we do a quality product because we think that if you want to do a product for the consumer, you should do something like this. the law doesn't establish in Europe that you have to dry the rice in this way. It's something that we do voluntarily.
Mm. Well, so you make a very fine product then, I would imagine. And I want to talk about that product. I want to talk about the varieties of the rice and the final product that we get to eat. But we have to take a short break. So stay with us and we'll talk about rice, the food, when we come back.
Support for this episode comes from Team Pennsylvania, hosting the Pennsylvania Hemp Summit, with two events in 2022 that offer a place for farmers, professionals, investors, and policymakers to learn and connect, while providing an occasion to network and grow the businesses that comprise the region's hemp industry. The Pennsylvania Hemp Summit aims to increase the Commonwealth's shared knowledge and resources in order to inspire innovative investments and to form transformative partnerships in the hemp industry. Join us for our upcoming trade show, reception, and investor pitch competition in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on April 26th to 27th, and again on November 8th and 9th for educational sessions, a trade show, and reception. Register to attend or get involved by exhibiting or sponsoring. Details at pahempsummit.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Jesse Sparks, host of the new podcast, The One Recipe, from the team behind The Splendid Table. This pod is all about that one recipe that you lean on. The one you share with friends, the one you make when you need a little love, and the one you know will work every single time. Every week, I talk with chefs and gifted cooks from all over the world about their one, and the story behind it. We're here to help you build your kitchen library one dish at a time. Follow The One Recipe wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I am speaking with Paolo. Okay, Paolo, you have to help me again with your name. Okay,
Salvadori.
Paolo, I'm sorry, Salvadori di Wiesenhof. Okay, where is the Wiesen? Salvadori di Wiesenhof. First of all, can you talk about the name a little bit?
Salvadori di Wiesenhof is my father's name. It comes from an area of northern Italy that until First World War was Austria. And with the First World War became Italy. That's why we keep this name that is in German.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, I assume that it was Austrian, being in northern Italy. But that's interesting. My question that I had was also about the varieties of rice. So over the years, I'm sure you've found which varieties, or if you didn't, your ancestors, which varieties grew better on the land and which were good producers. What are the varieties that are most popular in that region of Italy?
In Italy, we cultivate more than 100 varieties of rice. It would be probably difficult to find the names of all these varieties because many of them are used to do flour. People who are allergic to gluten, they eat product made with the rice flour, for example.
Certainly. Yeah.
But the most important variety for us are the variety that we use to do risotto. So you cannot do the risotto with all the variety, because to have a good risotto, you need to use a variety that has a big percent of starch inside. The starch gives you the possibility that when you cook it, the risotto becomes very creamy. We say that the risotto, when it's well done, is all'onda, on the wave, because when it's finished, and if you move the saucepan, you see the rice moving like a wave. And this is the starch that the rice has left in the saucepan. Mm-hmm. The better variety to do risotto are Carnaroli, Vianone Nano, Arborio, and Baldo. These are varieties more difficult to cultivate. There are other varieties that are very, very easy to cultivate. And you produce from this normal variety more than the double than Carnaroli, Arborio, or Vialone Nano. So it depends what you want to do. If you want to produce a variety and that you want to sell with your name to the farmers, to the consumers, you should use the Carnaroli d'Arborio. But if you want to produce a variety that can be used as a flower, you can produce other varieties, for example, Selenio or other varieties that are very easy to produce and they don't suffer of many diseases. The Carnaroli is like a horse that you only use for competition. You must be keep in a very good condition because every change in the climate you lose the production, so it's more difficult to produce. And only a few farmers they grow these varieties.
Interesting. It's a good analogy to keeping it like a racehorse. Yes, right, or a stud, right?
Exactly.
And certainly, you know, over the years here in America, finally, you know, we were able, I'm talking over the years, you know, since the probably 70s, 60s or 70s, we've been able to find on most of our supermarket shelves different varieties for the different types of dishes that I know from experience as, you know, as being a consumer and a cook that, having lived in Italy for a while, I came back and expected to be able to find arborio rice or Carnaroli or Violone Nanno. Well, forget it. You know, nothing. You could only find whatever the locally long grain rice that was produced. So it was, you know, it was so exciting to finally see all of these different varieties of rice hit the shelves here in America so that we could make some of those dishes. But even isn't Selenio used a lot for sushi?
Yes, it's the best Italian variety that you can use to do sushi. And we grow a lot of Selenio here in Lucedio because it came very well in with our land. And so it's a variety it's more than 15 years that we grow Selenio.
All right. Well, a lot of people like to make what in Italy you'd call a sformato, or, you know, a molded rice dish. And, you know, they always get upset because they unmold it and it just, you know, falls apart. They don't realize, as you just explained, that, you know, the different varieties have more starch and they'll hold it together. And yet they still retain that bite, you know, the al dente. Bite to the grain, which is so important
for us, it's very important. And also in Italy, it's not so easy to find a risotto al dente. It's easier to find it in northern Italy, but if you go in center or southern Italy where pasta is much more used, it's difficult to find a very good risotto.
Right. Well, as I, at the top of the show, when I gave that example of the study that was done by Gambero Rosso, were you surprised to hear that rice was like fourth in the list? I mean, it was very, very high up there.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
Because many Italians, they didn't know that Italy is the biggest rice producer in Europe, in the European Union. When we do some food show, but not only outside Italy, also in Italy, sometimes they have no idea if they live in center Italy or southern Italy, that we are the leader in the European Union. Because for many people, they use the rice they have the idea of the rice like a commodity, that it's not important, the variety, you use it when you have some stomach problem, so you eat the rice, soup with rice inside. So not many people are very focused on risotto, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Unless you travel north, right?
Yes.
Then we know. So would you say that in Piemonte, what is the most popular rice dish? You said risotto.
Risotto with mushrooms. It's very, very well known in Piemonte because we have the mushrooms. Piemonte is a region with mountains, lake, hills. So you can find the mushrooms, you can find some cheese, you can have a risotto with cheese, and risotto with truffles when it's the good season of the truffle. Mm-hmm. So if you want to visit Piemonte, I'm sure the people will find they will have the possibility to find a good risotto.
Well, I don't know if it's lunchtime yet where you are, but where we are, it's lunchtime. And boy, could I use a bowl of risotto right now. You've made a lot of changes to your retail availability. You're making products that are more user-friendly. Can you talk about what you've done with some of those products?
Yes, we don't want to put some chemical products inside the bags to have a long life. And so we pack in protected atmosphere to keep all the nutritional value. And we pack the rice very often during the year. So it's more easier for the consumer to have a rice that is has been worked since not many months. Some people, they have the idea that the rice should be aged. This is something that is very... It's popular now in Italy because the idea of aged wine, and aged wine is always more important than a normal wine that you drink it immediately. But in reality, I think that it's better to have a fresh product because a cereal is not made to be kept for many, many years.
Mm. Yeah. I would imagine. I mean, humidity and
exactly. And then you have to add something to keep it. Otherwise, it's impossible to keep a product, a natural product, for years. You have to do something. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, my opinion is to eat the rice, not immediately, because when you harvest the rice in September, the rice needs at least three months because the starch inside is not completely fixed. There is a chemical reason that it's very complicated to explain. But there is a reason why it's better to start cooking the rice of the harvest from January. It keeps more al dente, and if you want to do a comparison with a rice that has been already harvested in October, and in November you cook it, and you cook with a rice that is has been harvested some months before, you can see the difference. So never do cook immediately the rice once has been harvested.
Hmm. Well, I'm not near any rice paddies, so that'll be easier for me. but that's a really good point to bear in mind. Do you export much of your product
to
the United States? I mean, obviously throughout Europe, but
we export 70% of our production.
Hmm.
And in more than 25 countries, and United States is one of the most important countries for us.
Well, I know we have to give a big shout out to our mutual friend, Rolando Beramende, who recommended you to me to talk about rice production. And I know his consortium of Manicaretti.
Yes.
Online, it deals in your rice, and that's one good source for me to know about. Well, it's just such an interesting process.
I have something more interesting things probably to say to the American people, because Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States, he visited Vercelli in 1787, and he bought some bags of rice, and he brings by boat the seeds. And he planted the seeds in his estate in Virginia. And we have a copy of a letter that he wrote to a friend. And he said, I have to admit that the rice from Piedmont, it's much better than the variety that I was used to cultivate. So when we come to the United States, I will always bring a copy of the letter. Because I know that he's a very loved president. And so
yeah,
he was also a farmer.
Yes. Yes. In fact, a lot of work has been done on his farm and his home to restore it to its original and probably even better state. So that's interesting. Who would have guessed that he was growing rice from Piemonte?
That moment, it was not legal to bring, because it was such a rentable production that it was not legal to export the grain of rice outside the Piemonte and Lombardy. And so he asked a man to bring the rice to Marseille, because he was going back to the United States from Marseille, from France. And so it was like, I don't know how to say exactly in English, but it was something against the Italian law of that moment.
Yeah.
Because they want to protect the rice grains, because It was the most rentable cultivation at that moment.
Mm, interesting. Yeah. Well, seeds are to be protected for sure.
Yeah.
And that's, and it's, but I mean, no region can really grow it quite like,
absolutely,
like that region in Italy. Well, I thank you so much for sharing your time and sharing all this incredible information. And again, the name of your, you call it your factory, your farm, your
farm
business.
Is Principato di Lucedio.
Principato di Lucedio.
Lucedio,
right.
Yeah, Lucedio means light of God. Because the monks, the legend said that the monks, they choose to build the abbey there where the abbey is now, because they, in a foggy day, at a certain moment, a light arrives and open the fog, and so they decide to start the abbey in that point.
Well, I looked at the pictures of the abbey and it's truly beautiful. I mean, I'm sure a lot of work has gone into restoring it since the 1100s, but it is really quite beautiful. And
next
abbey,
year we will have it will be the 900 years of from the foundation. So we will prepare a book. It will be in Italian and in English. So I would say to Orlando to give you a copy of the book, and so you will see the Lucedio, the old Lucedio, the new Lucedio, and the future of Lucedio.
That's true. That's terrific. It's terrific that you are preserving all of that history that is so important, and so important for us to understand, you know, everything from rice cultivation to architecture and land. And again, I thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. And my regards to the Contessa.
Thank you.
And yes, and I'm going to, post a picture of the property for my readers. If you go to our website, the Heritage Radio Network website, which is our home, and you go to my show page, A Taste of the Past, next week you will be able to see a picture of this on the website. So,
thank you very much.
Paolo, thank you. And thank all of my listeners for tuning in, because again, this has been A Taste of the Past. And I would like to take a moment now for my listeners to tell you all about the Heritage Radio Network, or HRN, as we're known, a special business membership drive that's going on right now. We all know that small businesses keep our communities vibrant. And for $500, Heritage Radio Network will shine a light on your work and will help sustain our mission to expand the way people think about food. This fundraiser will support not just my show, but the amazing HRN community of all the food podcasts we produce. As a thank you for this tax-deductible donation, your business will receive on-air mentions, social media posts, and listings on our website and more. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org/biz to become a business member today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/biz. Thank you, and thanks for listening.
A Taste of the Past is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money.
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos.
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.